Hello, welcome, and I'm glad that you guys are here on a Friday. I know we are the ones blocking you from finishing up Ignite, I guess, but we're excited to talk to you about managing the Service Fabric applications on public cloud, private cloud, or on-prem. So that's something which we will talk about in detail. I'm Chaco Daniel. I am a principal program manager with the Service Fabric team. I've been with this team for close to 7 years. Pretty excited about distributed computing, so pretty excited to talk to you something about it. And this is...
Hi, I am Rishi Sinha. I'm a principal dev manager in the Azure Service Fabric team. I have been with this technology for the last 9 years. And distributed systems is the way to go, so I've been with this technology for that period. Thank you.
So here's the agenda for today. So we'll keep it quick with lots and lots of demos and very little amount of the PowerPoint presentations itself. So we'll start with some concepts and terminology so that we actually all talk up the same language. And then we'll actually give you examples and also show you demos on how Service Fabric can be deployed to a set of machines you have on-prem. You can deploy it to Azure, you can deploy it to any other cloud of your choice. Specifically, we'll show you an implementation in AWS. The next thing, which is managing your cluster version, this has been one of the biggest feedbacks which you've got from our existing customers, that they would like to manage as to what specific cluster version runs on their clusters. So we have a way to do it. It is going to be a first-class feature, so we'll talk about that and also show you. The next one is there are some tools which we provide in our SDK and also in our cluster, which actually allows you to set up continuous integration and continuous deployment of microservices. Lastly, we'll round off by talking about monitoring and diagnostics. I'll give you a demo of one of my implementations using Elk and Kibana. So that'll be an interesting one. And then we'll close out by talking about the Q&A itself. And so let's get started. So yes, so the very first thing we, of course, want to start with, why do you like microservices approach itself. So one of the very big reasons why you would want to do it is in this day and age when you have to have your applications running 24/7, 365 days a year, you want to make sure that you are able to upgrade your cluster, your applications, add new features, debug. You want to troubleshoot and also fix bugs all the while not taking downtime. So these are one of the biggest reasons why you would want to think in terms of microservices itself, so that you can do all these things without any downtime at all. So the other thing is, of course, the improved utilization of your resources. Finally, you are paying for the VMs, you're paying for your host machines, so you want to make sure that it's highly utilized, and that's something which you would be able to do with a microservices approach. So one of those things, which is one of the slides which just talks about a very high level, what would such a platform look like. So basically, such a platform should allow you to build applications using any framework of your choice, also any language of your choice, and then also allow you to deploy into a platform of your choice, an environment of your choice. Maybe you're one of those folks who actually have an arrangement with AWS, for example. You should be able to deploy it there, although you're using a Microsoft technology. So things of that nature makes up a great microservices platform. So we have the right set of platform for you, Azure Service Fabric as a platform. So this actually provides you all those features which I just talked about. It allows you for lifecycle management. It gives you a greater availability. It orchestrates containers. There are multiple programming languages you can use. There are multiple programming models you can use. We have 3 programming models which you can choose from. One is Actures, Reliable Collections, and also get your own EXEs, which you do not want to even convert over now. Then there is actually a health and monitoring subsystem which we have, which is standalone, and also basically you can plug into it. It's a very robust system as well. And then, of course, since we are going to be built on, at least in Azure, we're going to be built on VMSS, so it allows you for auto-scaling. All these things can be done from the dev box on to Azure, to on-premise, and to other clouds. So this is the one which we'll talk about a little bit more. And then, of course, last but not least, we are available in Linux and Windows. So you can choose the OS you want this to be deployed to. So let me first start with a demo. So this demo is actually a very simple app. This is the app you guys may be already familiar with. This is actually in the getting started samples. And this will be called, this is called the Visual Subject Sample, and that's the link to it. So let me just go through it and then show you. That is the one demo we will use continuously throughout all our demos. The same application will be deployed to all the four environments, and we will show you it working. So quick introduction to the program itself. So Visual Studio Objects, the Visual Objects basically has two major services. One of them is a web service, which actually is a Paper.js application or service. So that is written in Paper.js. The other one is C#. So this is an application manifest, which actually talks about those. So here is the one, which is the web service piece of it. And then you have the actor service, which is here. So that's in C#. So this is the one which we will be using to deploy into multiple clouds and also into the on-prem data centers. So let me just, so locally I have a cluster running. I'm just going to press F5. It should actually run, it should go and deploy it. And so this is the very first one I'll show you, which will be here. So here's the cluster you have locally. You can do manage a cluster. And then you can see that I have one application deployed. This application happens to be this guy. And then the SFX, which is running on it, we saw. Sorry, too many things running. So here's the application that behind that it is made of multiple services. Here they are, and then they are deployed onto multiple nodes. So I don't want to go through all the SFX because it's something which you guys have already seen. So let me just go on to the next topic. Basically, is we will want to show the same thing can be deployed on an on-prem cluster, and for which we have Rishi here, and he's going to talk about that a little bit.
Hey, so as Chako mentioned, we are going to talk about our on-prem cluster. So in order to create a Service Fabric cluster on-prem, the basic set of things you need are what is shown over here. We have, for this particular cluster, we have 6 HP Elite desktops. These have quad-core AMD processors, around 8 gigs of memory, 250 gigs of SSDs. There's a gigabit network hub, and obviously you need power to power the whole thing up. And when we put it together, this is what it looks like. And you could take it. This is your data center where you can run your on-prem clusters. So how do we set it up? So if you look at it, in order to set up an on-prem cluster or set it up on AWS, you need to start with a cluster configuration defined in an ARM-like template in JSON. And if you look at it, at the top is the name. So this is a friendly name so that you can identify your cluster. There is nothing that enforces it to be unique, but from your perspective, it should be unique so that you can identify what cluster you're talking about. The next is the cluster configuration version. Now, this has to be unique per cluster per configuration instance. So when you want to upgrade your configuration, it needs to be bumped up so that we can actually make sure that you are intending to do what you're intending to do as opposed to a mistakenly deployed configuration. The next tag is API version. This helps us deploy older manifests with new code as well so that we can actually parse it in the right API version. If you look at the other two folded sections, these are nodes and properties. The nodes section is what describes your infrastructure, the set of machines where you want to deploy Service Fabric. The properties section actually describes what you want your cluster to look like. What are the properties of that cluster? Let's go into the node section. So for this particular cluster, if you see, there are 5 nodes that are defined. And if we dig into one of those nodes, each node has a node name. So this, again, is a friendly name. Has to be unique per cluster. So we also use it in internal identification. And when you actually go into SFX, this is what shows up as your node name. Then you have the IP address. This is obviously the IP address you want your node to be listening at. This can also be an FQDN if you want to use Windows security. The next is node type ref. We'll talk what node types are in a couple of minutes. And then there are two important concepts that you need to be aware of. One is fault domain. This is the physical failure domain of your infrastructure. So how does your infrastructure fail? At the very top, it could be a data center. If you look at it, it's hierarchical. And at the very top is the data center. If your data center goes down, all of your VMs, physical hosts in that data center, obviously go down. Then you could have something like a rack, where if the network switch goes off for that rack, your entire rack is inaccessible. And you could also have physical hosts, because every VM hosted on that physical host will go down. The next is upgrade domain. So this is more a virtual concept of how you want to service your Service Fabric cluster. The assumption is whenever you are servicing, whether it's replacing hardware or upgrading the OS or doing something with a physical host when you are running on VMs, you do it upgrade domain by upgrade domain. You don't take more than an upgrade domain out at a time. What this allows us to do is, from Service Fabric perspective, whenever we do upgrades, we will do upgrades in the same upgrade domain fashion as you do upgrades for the infrastructure. So that means that we will not bring down more than an upgrade domain at a time. And we will place replicas across fault domains and upgrade domains in a way that taking down an upgrade domain on a fault domain will cause no availability loss. Now, if you go down further, there's node 2, node 3, node 4, and node 5. So this is basically specifying that I want a 5-node cluster, and this is the metadata you need about those 5 nodes. So going into the properties section, if you look at it, there are a few major sections. At the top is the diagnostic store. Now, this diagnostic store basically specifies where you want to collect the diagnostics information. Now, if something goes wrong with the cluster, this is where, and you want to call support, this is where we'll get all of the diagnostics information collected from. And so this is very important to set up. You can set it up in 2 ways. You can our recommendation is to use Azure Storage so that everything is easily accessible for us. And you can set it up as an Azure Storage store type, and then you have to specify an Azure Storage connection string. Or you could set it up as a file share, because especially in on-prem, you might not have access to Azure Storage, because one of the reasons for on-prem might be that you don't have you don't want internet connectivity there. The next important section is security. There are 2 major types of security you could define. One is the cluster credential type. This defines what type of security you want for intranode communication inside the cluster. And then is the server credential type. This defines what is the authentication authorization mechanism that the server responds to when the client tries to connect to it. You could have Windows or X509 in either place. And in this case, we've chosen an X509 certificate-based deployment. So once you go in, you have to then specify what is the certificate information. And so you specify the cluster certificate, and this is the certificate that we'll pull up and use for the communication within the nodes. We encrypt, we make sure that the cluster itself is completely secure. Then comes the server certificate. Now, in this case, we have kept both the cluster and server certificate the same. Ideally, they should be separated out, because you want this server certificate to be published outside so that people know what it is. And the cluster certificate you don't want available to anybody. And then basically this is how the servers will authenticate themselves. Now, to the client, you can specify the thumbprints that will have access to your cluster. There are 2 options. If you look at it, there's an is admin mode, which specifies whether whoever is connecting with the certificate has access to do write operations against the cluster. If you have isAdmin false, all you can do is read. You can see what are the nodes in the cluster, what are the applications deployed. But if you want to deploy an application or take some repair actions against an application or upgrade, effectively do any write operations against the cluster, that is not allowed. So this is how you will secure your cluster. And then the next is an important concept, which is the reliability level. This is what defines how reliable your system services would be. And the system services are the things that actually manage your application. Now, as I had alluded, we are going to talk about node types next. Now, if you look at the node type, it starts with a name, and then it has a bunch of client connection endpoints and other port information that is needed. This is specific to standalone, and on Azure, you'll deploy it slightly differently. However, the common part is primary. Now, this is the node type where we will host all of our system services. This is the same as you would do in Azure. And obviously, you can still specify capacities and placement constraints up in node types as well. And the last interesting piece is fabric settings. Now, in here, what we recommend you do at the very minimum is set up your fabric data root and fabric log root. Fabric data root is basically the place where we will place all of the data related to the system services. This is where your app binaries will be placed, your app's data will be placed. So ideally, this should not be the same as your OS drive. The OS will inevitably get corrupted, and the easiest and cheapest fix is to just go reimage the OS drive. And if your data is on some other drive, you go reimage the OS drive, add the node back into the cluster, and everything is functional. Even if you have to delete the data, obviously it's replicated, so we'll recover from it. However, this is an additional level of safety. And then fabric log root is where all of the diagnostics traces that we generate will be locally stored. So this is what describes the cluster that we are looking at up front over there. So let's go and look at what it looks like. So this is the standalone cluster that is deployed right in front of us. We have the visual objects application running up there. There are 5 nodes. Now, if I go ahead and just bring one of those nodes down, all I'm going to do over here is pull the network cable, and you'll see some of the bouncing pyramids actually stop bouncing. And the reason for that is all of the replicas hosted over there on that particular node are now reconfiguring. And the reason why they are not reconfigured completely yet is because, and let's hope it comes up soon. So if you look at the bouncing pyramids, they are bouncing now. And it took a little while because our failure detection for these network faults is set up at around 30 seconds maximum, at which point we will detect any network fault. And so once that was detected, the whole system automatically reconfigured, and it should have been displaying things by now, but since the bouncing pyramids are happily bouncing again, at least your application is completely available. Once the reconfiguration finished, we were done with everything. The other interesting thing that we wanted to point out was another deployment of Service Fabric that we have. Everything else looks identical. There's a visual object application deployed. There's 5 nodes on the cluster. The only interesting thing over here is if you look up here, it's actually hosted on compute.amazonaws.com. So whether you want to deploy on your own private data center, you can build up one of these things on your own. You have a data center already. You want to deploy on AWS because of whatever constraints you have. You can take the standalone deployment and deploy anywhere. And you get the same application lifecycle management that you would gotten on Azure. However, the level of integration that we have with Azure infrastructure, you will not get anywhere else. And the best way to run Azure Service Fabric is on Azure, and Chako will describe how we do that.
Great, thank you. All right, so I wanted to do a quick recap of what the standalone offering itself was. So this was something which we announced earlier this week. So as Rishi talked to you about, basically all it took was a some commodity machines, you stitch them together, and it became a cluster. It actually is a highly reliable cluster. We pulled out the network cable, and it's still, the application was running there, still ran. So that is the key about it. So basically, this particular offering allows you to deploy it wherever you would like for it to be deployed. The second one is, of course, we support Windows 2012 R2 today. There are plans to support 2016 as well, as soon as we have the GA announced. There will also be an offering for Linux coming up soon. So specifically, the Ubuntu Redis is what we will be doing. And then it also allows you to create secure clusters. In this example, we showed you how to create a cluster using certificates. So on-prem, one of those big things which happen is most of the big installations have AD. So basically, we do support Kerberos and AD for instead of the certificates altogether. So that's something which also can be done. And the one more thing is, a lot of customers I talked to today or like this over the week, they were thinking about this offering to be used as a CI/CD pipeline. So they do want to host their production clusters in Azure, but the initial ones, the tests, the PPL, the pre-production ones would be on these ones because you're not having recurring expenses on those, and then the cloud is where you truly have your scalable cluster. Last thing, of course, you certainly can use this for production. There are customers who are running in production today. There were a couple of customers who got go-live license prior to our GA itself. So there are some customers who are running in production, so that actually is proven as well. So now let me just talk about what you had just alluded to. So of course, the best implementation of Service Fabric happens to be in Azure because of a lot of reasons. Of course, the very first one being that the cluster itself is an ARM resource. So since it's an ARM resource, you actually can deploy a cluster using an ARM template. You can certainly, if you're one of those PowerShell people, if you're one of the CLI people, certainly use the ARM template for it. If you're one of those people who wants to start off playing and who also wants to do small amount of maintenance, create and manage clusters, you can absolutely do them on the portal. Portal does give you almost the same functionality as the ARM template does. So then the biggest reason why you should be running in Azure is the fact that the certificates which were deployed onto the on-prem cluster were managed by you. So basically, all of the rollover certs and stuff, whatever monitoring of these certificates had to be done by yourself. You can use Key Vault to do that in Azure. Then you can connect to the AAD, the Azure Active Directory, for all the client operations, whether it's admin or user. You are built on VMSS, which allows you to get auto-scaling, scale up and scale in and out. Then you can actually also have multiple node types in VMSS so that you can, each of these nodes are specifically suited to run your workloads which you're planning to do in your cluster. We have deep integration with the Fabric Controller, which actually allows us to gracefully move all your replicas out in case Fabric Controller decides to move one of your VMs from one host to the next without you even knowing or coming to know about it. So there are a lot of other reasons for it. Of course, we have integration with Azure Diagnostics as well. So let me show you a little bit. So I'll demo. So this basically will be the portal. I will use portal to show you all these, but you can use Azure PowerShell for it as well. So quickly, the reason I'm just going through this create process is because I wanted to show you a few things which have changed from the last time when we did this demo. So go to compute. Scroll down, or you can search, of course. I wanted to show you that this actually is a first-class offering which we got. So cluster name. So here you can use Windows or Linux. Windows will give you 2012 R2. Linux will give you Ubuntu 16.4. That's what you'll get as the operating system which runs on your VMs. Nothing else changes in terms of what you're doing for a process perspective. Hopefully I can do this very quickly. So I am choosing choosing a West US location. So node type count. So Rishi mentioned something about node types. Node types basically just means you have homogeneous VMs of the same kind. They have the same set of ports open, and they have the same behavior. That's all it means. So in the portal, we have restricted this to 3 node types. But if you are using an ARM template, you can actually go out to any number of node types you may need. So this is just an efficiency sake for the portal that we just chose one. So today, let's just take one. So take making it quick. So when you select a node type, so basically you're now going to try and get select the VM at this point, VM size. Durability tier. So this is an interesting concept. This one actually drives the integration level which you have with the Fabric Controller and the Azure infrastructure which we have. So if it's bronze, this is available for anything which is less than a complete machine. So complete machines can take gold. That means the complete machines are only 2 kinds. 2 today, that is D15 V2 and then Godzilla 4, G4. Those are the only 2 VM SKUs which allows you to get a larger degree and a larger timeout for your integration. So for this purpose, for this exam, for this particular demo, I'm just going to choose bronze. Let me select a VM size. So this one, depending on your subscription, depending on your region, these recommendations differ, but we prefer that you select one of these which shows up as recommended. These recommendations are not based on what we know of your workload, because you are the ones who would know the workload itself. So the only criteria which I would say is do not select an A0 for your production clusters. So anyway, so this is D1. I'm going to select this. If you want to go select, see all of them which are supported, you can just do view all, and then the rest of the SKUs will show up. I'm going to select that. So reliability tier is something which Rishi talked about. Basically, just says that what is your system service replica set count. That's all that is. Silver happens to be 5, bronze is 3, and gold is 5, platinum is 7. So that just also drives the minimum which you will need. For production, the minimum size recommended is 5. And if you are just a test only, you can actually go down to 3. And then if there are any application ports you want, you can actually select it here, and we will open it up in the load balancer for you. Okay. And then comes the, okay, let me see what else is there here. We'll talk about the Fabric version in a second. Let me just skip over at this point, because that itself is a big topic. I just want to introduce it better. So here, you have 2 options, secure and unsecure. We never want to run a production cluster unsecure, because that is just a disaster waiting to happen. So never do that. The other thing which is very important to know is if you start off your cluster as an unsecure cluster, there's no way to transfer that or transform it into a secure cluster. And if you start with a secure cluster, you cannot go back to unsecure cluster. So the cluster which you create has to meet your needs, and that's how you should choose upfront. So security. Of course, we support certificates here. So before you come in here, you have to make sure your certificate is uploaded to the Key Vault, and that's just basically asking you questions on it. I already have it uploaded. So let me just quickly get it. Certificate URL, it's just a question of filling out stuff. The reason I'm doing this is because I want to also explain the ARM template which gets generated, and that would actually be helpful to see and contrast with the template which the cluster manifest which Rishi walked through for the on-prem piece of it. There are lots of similarities, and then I can point them out as well. So certificate, and then Control V. Okay, so then there are some advanced settings. So let me just quickly show that to you. I will not fill them out. So there are customers who would like to have more than one cluster certificate deployed. Certainly you can use that. Typically, I would say that whenever there is a certificate rollover scenario, that is when you start to use secondary certificates for. But there are customers who do that anyways. That's something which we allow. Admin client and read-only client, that's something very similar to what we talked about when we were talking about the standalone cluster. basically allows you for admin operations and read operations. You can specify any number of them. In a create workflow, only one of them are allowed. In a browse workflow, you can add any number of these certificates. Last one, if any of these, any of the admin operations, whether it's admin or user, you can actually use AAD as well. You have to specify the tenant ID, the cluster application, and the client application. This is actually coming from the AAD implementation itself. Okay. So once we get that, so now what this portal is doing basically is it is creating a resource group called Ignite Demo, even before you hit the create, and then it is running a validate on it. The reason for validate, it runs a validate on that is to just make sure that all the entries you give it is are valid and not fail at deployment time. Certainly, there are things which will still fail at deployment time. For example, if you don't have enough cores and so forth, or maybe the key vault entries are wrong, they might fail. But in the future, this will be it'll be advanced a little bit more. So now let's go into looking at the template. Will come sometime. There you go. So I'm going to take this template, Control A, Control C, allow access. So I like this JSON editor, which Control A, delete, Control V. This actually is a very good demo tool. I've found it to be very good in terms of showing people as to what are the things which these are made of. So there are 8 resources. You would wonder how come there are 8 resources for a 5-node cluster. So I'll just go through this and show you. So the very last ones, the way we have built this template basically is the very last one. Typically is our cluster resource itself. This cluster resource itself basically defines the cluster for SFRP, which is Service Fabric RP behind the scenes. That's what it does. Let's go through the properties a bit, so that you will see what you just entered in there is going to show up here as well. Certificate, basically this is the certificate variable which you added. Then if there are client certificates, thumbprints, you will just see all those things there. If there are diagnostics, accounts, and so forth. And I will not go through each of these, but basically the properties you entered on the portal just get translated here. We'll specifically come back to this and talk about upgrade mode later on. And the VM image happens to be Windows. That's what I selected. So let's just go through number 6. This happens to be the VMS's definition. So I don't want to go through these because it's going to take a long time to go through it. But anyway, so one big thing which I want to point out here is this is one thing which a lot of customers have asked me is why is it automatic? The only reason why VMS's in here, that they allow two modes. One is manual, another is automatic. The only reason for Service Fabric clusters have to be automatic is because we do want any topology changes which happen to be notified to all the VMs, and that's why it has to be automatic. So there's one thing which you have to make sure if you're authoring your VM ARM template, you have to make sure it's automatic. So number 5. So this one basically is an array of 5 storage accounts. So this basically is used to store VHDs for your 5 VMs. So initial templates which we were generating actually had only 1 for the VHDs. The reason we actually moved to the 5 is because that allows you to scale up like to hundreds of VMs. Before that, basically one of the storage accounts has a limit of 20 VHDs at this point. They're trying to improve it. So in order to future-proof it, we are using 5. This just means that when VMSS is getting allocated, the VMs actually are just round-robined into each one of these 5 storage accounts. So if you think that you will never increase more than 5, you can actually make it 1, and then you'll be fine. You don't need 5. The other reason that actually this was a question when Mark was presenting on Wednesday, the question was, okay, now that I have 5 FDs, how about the storage account? If I just have only 1 storage account, it's possible that if that XStore goes down for some reason, my VHDs go down. This actually is a way to prevent that from happening. So I would recommend using 5, but if it's something which you think you shouldn't, then you're okay not to use it. So here's the load balancer definition for it, and then here's the public IPs for your VM. Here's the VNet definition. Here's the storage account for diagnostics. This is exactly where the diagnostics, all our diagnostics which from the cluster goes to. And there should be one more, which is actually the logs. So that actually is the set of 8 resources which were there. And so now let's just go look at a cluster which I already have. Let me go back. How do I go back? Template, go back. And then basically all you're doing is create, and it'll just create it for you. Or if you wanted to just deploy the template, you can do that as well after making changes to it. So for the sake of speeding this around, let me just go take the cluster which I already have running. Cluster demo. So here there are some changes which happened from in the recent times. So I just wanted to quickly show you those things. Looks like it's taking some time. So essential tab, here's the fabric version which you would see. This Fabric Explorer, this is the link to the Fabric Explorer itself. And then here is the connection, here is how you'll connect using PowerShell or TCP. And here is the health state for all these VMs. And there is one application I have which is deployed, which is Visual Objects. Before I go and show you the Visual Objects itself, I wanted to show you two specific things. One is the security tab. So security tab, basically, when I first created it, basically it had just one primary certificate. And then you can add more, basically just by clicking that. I will show you one in a few minutes. All right, so now that I have this cluster deployed in Azure, let me show you the visual objects which are running in it. And then we can move on to the next topic. So here it is. It's actually the same Chakode demo 02, and it's running in West US. All right, so while we are at it, I also wanted to show you that this same bouncing pyramids, we actually have an application in Java which we also deployed, and that one is in Linux. So let me show you that. Okay, where is it? Yeah. All right, let's start again. So here is a cluster I have. It's a Linux demo 01. Basically the same SFX, and you can see that it's deployed in West US, in East US, sorry. It's in East US, and then you can see the SFX, the same Service Fabric Explorer, which you could see in Windows, you can see it here as well. And then you can also see that the Visual Objects is running on it. So this one is Linux demo 01. So in order to prove that, of course, there actually is a Linux cluster. Where is it gone? Man, this is crazy. So let me just go and so it's a secure cluster, so it's going in there. So let me just go TS into one of these machines using PuTTY. So I've actually TS'd into the very first machine. And then if I were to type hostname, it shows that there actually is Linux. So that's a demo of the same application deployed into Linux. One thing which I want to show you as well is very interesting is if I were to go here, where is it? All right, so I'm not able to find where is it gone? So if you look at basically I wanted to show you is when I see the application manifest, you can see that we actually use a container type. That's what I wanted to show you. But let's move on to the next topic for the sake of time. So number seven. Oh, yeah, I wrote it there. Okay, so now that we have shown you the four environments which deployed the same application, we just showed you on your laptop, on an on-prem cluster, and Linux. We also showed you one in AWS and two in Azure. So let's just go on to the next big thing, which actually is the feedback which you guys had given us. So a lot of times your applications are built, may not be built on the latest SDK which we released. So there was a big feedback from the community that we need to be able to select the cluster version which runs your application so that you are actually more in control of the cluster version itself and be able to pause any upgrades which may happen there or do it at will. So what we have done now is basically give the control to you. When you set up your cluster, you can choose to say, I want my cluster to be upgraded automatically. So of course, you'll set the upgrade mode to automatic, or you can set it to manual, and at that point, you'll be prompted for choosing one of the supported versions which are available to you to choose. So the key word there was supported version. The reason why we are trying to keep only a few versions which are supported is because that is the best way to make sure that latest and the greatest are still running on your cluster, but also give you the benefit of choosing the time when you want to upgrade. So there may be your high times versus low times in your application or your service, which we may not be able to do, to preempt. So today I will show you a demo of using the portal. The same thing can be done using APIs. There are APIs which will give you all the supported versions for that particular region, for that particular subscription, for that particular cluster. So it is pretty unique, customized. That API will actually take all these parameters to give you the exact next version you can go to. You can certainly switch from an upgrade mode of automatic to manual, or manual to automatic. So this a lot of customers have told us that they like this particular feature because there may be times in the year when they don't want to deal with manual upgrades. They just want to do automatic upgrades. So that's something they can do. So today our policy is that when we announce a new Service Fabric version, the previous version is end of life 60 days from then. So basically that means that you have 60 days from the date of the new version to get to the new version. That is, the 60 days is by policy. So if there is any feedback on this, certainly voice it. That may be something which we can adopt, we can change, but 60 days is what we're starting with. This actually gives you a lot of time. If you step back and think about it, a new version comes out, say 5.3, You've been on that version for some time, at least a month, and then 5.4 comes out. You still have another 60. So you are now looking at a 5.3 version which you have had for 90 some days. So it doesn't. Although 60 days might look small, but actually, in reality, it may not be. And we don't end of life CUs or patches which we apply to your cluster. That means 5.3.1 or 5.3.3 or any of these minor versions do not reset the 60-day clock. In order to make sure that you stay supported, there is a warning which we generate 14 days prior to the cluster going out of support. 14 days was just something which we thought is a good enough time. But if that is the other feedback which we will need, certainly from you, you can comment on our forums or any other way to let us know if 14 is not enough or what it should be. And there is also a thought that we can actually start giving you warning 60 days in advance. So there's something which is also configurable, something which I'll show you as a demo as well. The last thing is, some of the customers asked me this question: how will I know there's a new version? So typically the plans are just basically announce them on the blog. Like we have been doing all this while. And then since there are notifications which happen in the cluster itself, we can certainly you will get notified. And if you think there are other things which, like for example, you need an email to your subscription alias, that's something which we can think about as well. So do provide us your feedback. The last thing, I actually have a link down there says manage your cluster version page. Please do go read about it. There's a lot of details behind it in there. So let me see. Oh, that's next is a demo.
While Chaco sets that up, I wanted to clarify that this is applicable not just to Azure. Even your on-prem clusters will get the same upgrades, will get the same warning, and you can set them up and upgrade them at your own pace.
Okay. So while we were creating this new cluster, you saw that there was, okay, there's too many windows open. So I'm going to close some of them. So while we were doing the create workflow, you saw that there's actually a mode called upgrade mode, automatic versus manual. So I'm going to not show you that specifically because of the time constraints. What I'll do is let me go and pick up a cluster which I already have and show you specifically what you would be doing, because all your clusters as of today maybe are, where is my dashboard? There. And the connectivity is really slow.
Still rendering.
Okay, so let me just take this one. So this is a typical example of customers who already have a cluster running in production. So you would see that basically Fabric upgrades are set to automatic today. So we rolled out 5.3.1.121.9494 like last week. So that's how you all got upgraded. So you can actually do this. You just say manual, and then when you do manual, there's a couple of things which are very interesting here. So one, I wanted to highlight this for you guys. When you do manual settings, you actually can specify a lot of these values, which basically says, when does your upgrade timeout? Does it timeout in 12 hours? There happens to be 12 hours there at this point as a default. And then every upgrade domain times out in 2 hours. So these are configs which you can change. There's a good amount of literature there, so you can understand it. There's also a link to my documentation, which you can read about as well. There's a boatload of all these things. Please go read about it before you change any of these. Otherwise, I would say just leave it alone. Once that is done, basically, you're just saving it. Once it's saving, basically, it just says that the Fabric upgrade is submitted. Now, actually, there is an upgrade going on in progress. Upgrade is in progress. If you look, this would actually say that upgrade is in progress, and you are now going to be set as manual. So when it's manual, you stay on 5.3.1.21.9494. So that is the key there. You will stay there. So it'll show up soon. The upgrade will get kicked off pretty soon. So you would see that there's an upgrade which gets kicked off, and then it's just a config change, so it'll be a very quick one. So then the next piece which I wanted to show you was the other thing which I claimed, that there are times when you can switch from a manual mode, which happens to be one of our demo clusters, which I had created like 3 weeks ago. So I had set that to manual, and you can switch that one. I'll switch that for you now, if it comes up, to automatic. So this one I want to highlight this in a scenario where, for example, you had set your cluster up for a manual mode, and then the cluster is now pinned on 5.2.7. So at this point, I want to see, okay, now I'm ready to go to 5.3. So you see that 5.3 is already there. So this is the next available upgrade you can go to. That's all it means. So you can choose to say, go there, or you can just do automatic, and then it'll go to the 5.3. So it's a choice. You can just do this. So this is what I would expect anyone who is in manual to do so. And then when you save, there's a Fabric upgrade which is kicked off. So all these are automatic. So it just happens. So it's going on. So the next thing which I wanted to show you was a cluster which actually is nearing expiry. So how does it look? So this is something which we are evolving. So at the bare minimum, what I show you is what you will be able to see today. Not today, because we don't have any releases in production which are expiring. So if, for example, when we release 5.4, then 5.3 will expire in 60 days from the day of announcement. So this particular one, it's in our test region. So if you look at this one, so you would see, I don't know whether you guys can see this. So this is what you would see, that this particular version is going out of support in one day. So that's the kind of warning you will see. There's also other warnings which we are planning to do. For example, you would see that the cluster health itself turning into warning. So it's more like it will actually now trigger off your monitoring or diagnostics pipeline. Or we're also thinking in terms of sending an email to the subscription owners. Those are the things which we're planning to do. But if there's any more feedback, certainly send our way, and then we can do the changes which make sense. All right, so I have now shown you what happens there. So one last one is, let me go on to another cluster and show you a upgrade of a certificate. So I have an existing cluster out here. So the reason I want to show you certificate rollover is because this is something which I expect most of you guys who are using certificates to do so. So before you get there to add a new certificate for the primary or secondary which is expiring, make sure that it's updated and uploaded to the Key Vault, and also you have deployed it to your VMSS. So by the time you come here, all you are specifying here is a thumbprint. So plus authentication. Let me get my new certificate here. So here there are plenty of choices here. Secondary cluster certificate, admin client, read-only client, or are you adding a new Active Directory? All these are supported. This particular scenario I'm trying to show you is basically when you're going to add a new secondary certificate so that your primary certificate can be rolled over. So all you need to do is this, and then this add. So it looks like there is some validation issues here. Home. Yep, and then add. So once you add it, basically now it just says that the cluster is updating your user certificate, and you will see that happening there. And also, once you get out of this and then you go back to your Essentials tab, you will see a new status as well, which should say that your certificate is getting upgraded. The reason I was using all these mini clusters to show you different functionalities because if there is one fabric upgrade going on, we typically do not try to roll out another one. So there was no way of compressing the timeline. That's why I was using this. So updating user certificate, that's what it says. Okay. All right, so now that we've talked about managing cluster version and certificate rollover, we actually can move on to the next big piece. Which actually is the continuous integration and deployment for which Rishi is going to take over.
So for this part, as Chako mentioned, we'll be talking about continuous integration and deployment. Now, in this modern cloud world, the dev and ops personas have effectively merged into a single team called the DevOps team. Now, the inner dev loop is basically where all of the new innovation happens, new features are written, code fixes happen, and this is where the developers run unit tests, they run probably single machine tests. If the feature is complicated enough, they will do multi-machine validation as well. And once they are satisfied to a significant level that the code is of a reasonable quality, they will take the code and push it out to source control. Now, once it goes to source control, your build integration will kick in. It pulls the source into the build machines. It builds it. It then submits it to our test infrastructure. Now, these are multi-machine tests, long-running tests, random scenario tests, more targeted functional tests, the type of validation that you would expect for your app to go through before you feel that it is ready for release. Now, once it passes the test, it basically goes back to your build machine and says, yes, this build is of reasonable quality. Now, once you have accumulated enough features slash bug fixes and your build looks of reasonable quality, that is when it's ready for deployment. Normally, this is where it goes to production, but internally in the Azure Service Fabric team, we do not roll out anything to production directly. The first place it goes to is what we call the PPL cluster, which stands for pre-production long-running cluster. Now, these clusters are long-running by definition, which means we never tear these clusters down. The applications are actually not deleted unless we have to. They are upgraded on a regular basis. What that does is it allows the whole system to accumulate a lot of CRUD. These could be eventually your disk getting filled, some corruption happening. If the cluster is, if the machines are really long running, you could get to places where your processor is not performing as well because of actual physical degradation. Your network card might not be performing as well. So the infrastructure itself becomes a little bit flaky. On top of that, we have something that we call our fault injection engine. This allows us to induce a plethora of faults into the system. This fault injection engine can use targeted scenarios, like if you want to bring down a node, or you want to induce a complete data loss on a particular partition so that you want to test out your backup and recovery. Or you could run it in what we call the chaos mode. What that chaos mode allows you to do is, especially on your PPL cluster, to run it from 9 to 5 during the day. And you can run it at a fairly high configuration of rate of faults, so that the amount of faults you would probably get in your production cluster because of genuine failures in a matter of months, you can actually end up getting that in a few hours on, or maybe a few days in your PPL cluster. Now, the reason why we want it to be 9 to 5 is if chaos, for whatever reason, decides to go crazy, you're not getting live site incident calls in the middle of night. We treat this cluster as if it is production, and the moment anything goes bad, we generate an incident off of it, and we treat it as if it was a customer incident. Once it has gone through all of the validation that we believe it needs to go through, that is when we actually move it to production. Now, as it is a Service Fabric application, even when we move it to production, we will move it to production using upgrade domains. And if you have your watchdogs, which do some amount of not significant but non-trivial semantic validation and report health against your applications, if a bug for whatever reason, and it will flow through to production at some point or the other, and is caught by those watchdogs, we will roll back your upgrade to the previous non-buggy version. And so that is why there is, you want to have watchdogs on your production cluster, and you also want some amount of workload that is running on your production cluster to either be simulated on your pre-production or maybe even routed to your pre-production cluster. Obviously, you'll need customer agreement to that, but you want workload running on your pre-production cluster that will make sure that if you are having issues around your transaction, your serialization, deserialization, without an actual workload, you're not going to hit that. So that is why ability to run workload in pre-production and watchdogs in production, which Service Fabric provides, is actually a very beneficial thing. Now that we have talked about how we do CI/CD in Service Fabric team, let's look at how Service Fabric tooling will actually help you do CI/CD externally. So at the very first, we provide mocks for our various frameworks. This allows you to test your logic without integrating it with Service Fabric so that you can mock out. You can run a multitude of unit tests which just validates your business logic, has no interaction with Service Fabric per se. And this is where your unit tests and single process tests and much faster iteration tests would run. On the next level, even on your one-box clusters, we provide you the ability to provide failure injection into your one-box cluster. Now, this failure injection engine, once you have done your unit tests and you have integrated it with Service Fabric, at that point, you basically deploy it to your one-box cluster and let the chaos engine run or do targeted faults. That is where the fault injection comes in. Now, the advantage of the Service Fabric fault injection engine is it's identical whether you're running on one box, your test machines, your PPL cluster, or your production cluster. So once you have defined what you want in your faults, you can run the same set of faults anywhere. You can use PowerShell, you can use C# API wrappers, you effectively are using the same set of faults everywhere. So once that is done, you basically take the same set of faults onto your tests, your PPL. Now, as we said before, you can have a multitude of scenarios. You could have targeted scenarios. You could run chaos. There's configuration in terms of when you want chaos to run. There's also configuration coming on which application you want to target. Now, there might be some customers who are okay with more faults in their application than what other customers would be. And at that point, you could target those customers' application instances with fault injection saying, oh, induce a fault in this particular partition once a day, or once every 4 hours, once every 6 hours. And that is where you would get more validation in production about your application being resilient to the type of faults that will happen in the system irrespective. Now, Service Fabric does provide some level of resilience, but you also have to integrate it with the rest of the pipeline so that whatever contract your application needs to fill with Service Fabric, it's doing it correctly. So in terms of validating your app, we have a bunch of different methodologies that you can use. And then the next interesting part is our integration. What happened?
Okay. It's coming.
Sorry. Is our integration with the VSTS build tools. So if you use VSTS, you could actually pull your source control launch build task from anywhere, whether it's GitHub or VSTS or some other Git instance that you have. We have release pipelines that allow you to publish these builds to PPL clusters or to production clusters. So all of this pipeline that you need to automate can be easily automatable. Now that we have talked about that, let's look at a demo of how you can do it. So what you see over here is a VSTS instance of that we had created for this demo purpose. Let's go into code. So this is the Visual Studio Objects demo that we've been working with. If you go down to the build, if you see, you can go in, create a new build task, and you have the ability to create, along with a bunch of other things, Azure Service Fabric build tasks. And we have already created one, and the build has completed. Once you have done that build, the next thing you want to do is create a release task. Go create a new definition, and as with the build task, the Azure Service Fabric deployment task also comes up. So all of the automation that you want to do around your CI/CD pipeline, you can do through VSTS. Let's see, this is. So another interesting piece that we wanted to demo is the chaos engine. So up until now, you could have deployed a service that we shipped as a sample. However, from this release onwards, chaos is a first-class part of Service Fabric system services. So all you have to do is connect to the cluster and say, start Service Fabric chaos. And obviously, you can specify how long you want it to run, what is the maximum number of concurrent faults you want to do. And so if you look at this, this is actually deployed onto our PPL cluster. And eventually, when faults hit here, we actually introduced a bug in our handling of the on-close where it actually goes and sleeps for 5 minutes instead of immediately returning. Now, these are the integration points that you have with Service Fabric where there are certain set of contracts that we expect when we call certain APIs, when we trigger the cancellation token, you actually handle it correctly. And this is where, I'm guessing it's not hit any fault yet, which will cause you to close the replica. So let's see what type of faults are running at this point. Apparently, the faults haven't hit the system yet. I'm sure at some point of time, the chaos will kick in and things will not be working, but till then, I'll let Chako talk more about monitoring and diagnostics.
Okay. Let me get this up. Looks like it went back a little bit. So, we have no problems. Okay. So whenever I think about monitoring, there are three things I think about. One, what are the things the system gives you? And then, well, how can I use it? So those are two things. So one of those things which system out of the box gives you is perf counters. Perf counters of how the replicas are doing, how many of them are there. And there are like all the programming models will give you a lot of these perf counters and how things are doing. And there is also a lot of ETW traces which come out. Certainly, you can start to use those. That's one piece of what you can monitor. You can actually pump these out. They come into the logs. You can also augment them. So those are the two things you can do to monitor your service. The second thing which we talked about is specifically the health subsystem. Health subsystem basically out of the box monitors five pieces of things. One is nodes. Another one is application. Then there is services. If you're stateful, then it talks about partitions and replicas. So at all these levels, we actually give you robust health with just three statuses. Okay, if things are good, that's a green one, which you saw on this, on the Service Fabric Explorer. Warning, of course, if there is something wrong with it, it also gives you a reason. And then error, of course, it also gives you a reason and marks it error. So you can plug into that same model with your APIs and make it more rich. So for example, you can also say that if your application business logic is not working, you can actually add something more and report the same thing to that level. So business telemetry is the other one. Of course, that's something which you can customize for yourself and then allow that to be pumped out. So that's how I would think in terms of how I would if I were running an application, that's how I would try to use Service Fabric for. The next piece, okay, I don't know, that's not going. Press enter. Okay. Then the diagnostics piece of it. So when I press F5, there's a bunch of the diagnostic information which came out of our programming models. So that's something which you can use for your own system optics, and then also pump it out to any tool of your choice. Basically, you can use Elk, Kibana, or you can use Elasticsearch, or maybe whatever Azure provides, log analytics. So that's something which we can do. We basically use ETW, which is a standard for Windows. So let me give you an example of how that can easily be done using the same sample which we showed you, the visual object sample. So once we are done with this, I can even post it there. There's also a very good doc out there which talks about it. So here is the visual. Oh, it's already running. Didn't want to run it. Okay, so basically, this is the visual objects sample, which we had seen. I've added a couple of other listeners to the top of it. There's instructions on how to do it, very deep instructions. So, and basically, I also added a custom event, which just basically says wherever this bouncing object was, I'm going to write out its coordinate. So all I did was actor.event source, and then basically just wrote a message out. And then I have linked it up. So this application, I don't know why it's in warning. It is in warning, so it doesn't matter. We'll figure it out. So basically, that is actually a Elasticsearch Kibana installation. So there, if I look at it, I'm just getting those events pumped out into this thing. And in here, let's open one of these things. Come on, open up. So you will see, this is the custom event I just wrote out. So what this proves to you is that you can actually use a lot of tools which you already have inbuilt to do your own custom imaging, custom diagnostics, custom monitoring you can do. So anyway, so that's what I just wanted to show you an example of how we could use a third-party tool to do that and do your own monitoring and diagnostics. So let me just go back, and then we can recap, and then we'll be done. Looks like I can't move around with this at this point. So quick recap. So Service Fabric allows you to deploy your application, develop your application once, deploy it to a cluster of your choice, whether it is your dev cluster, your on-prem cluster, you want to take it to AWS, you want to take it to any other cloud or Azure. So we'll do it once. Then actually out of the box provides you no downtime upgrades. It gives you container orchestration. So unfortunately, I could not show you the application which actually had the container. There'll be a sample which we'll post. You can certainly go look at it, how you can actually host the guest EXEs in a container. It's something which we will also provide. And then allows you to control your cluster version. That actually is almost unheard of, where you have a managed service which allows you to control your own version. So that's something which we allow you to do so that you can manage your own production life cycles. Easy integration with monitoring tools, I just showed you that. And the last one is it allows you a lot of tools which you can use to build your own CI/CD pipeline. So basically, it is the best microservices platform, and you all should adopt it. That's what I would think. So the next thing, let's see what's next. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and then we can open up for questions at this point. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. Or you can just go to the mic. I can hear you. There is no, maybe we should start a new business. But it is very simple to put together.
Do you have any instructions on how someone would do that? Do you have anything written down or documentation?
Yes. If you go to Service Fabric on-prem or standalone offering, there's actually a big instructions on how to set up any of these things. This just happens to be just having some IP addresses and then off these machines. That's all you need. And then they'll just form a cluster. And then you're just deploying. And then you're deploying from any either your laptop or make one of them your deployment machine. And it'll just happen. So this one basically took us, like after we put it together, maybe like 2 hours. The biggest time we spent basically was to program that switch. But that, anyway, will be something which you already have. It is coming. So the reason I didn't show it is because I couldn't get this thing to work. So, but yes, you can use it. It's coming. Yes. Any other?
Yeah. How does containers fit into all this?
So containers, basically, if you step back and think about it, I didn't go through the definition of an application. So application is basically the unit of deployment and versioning, and then basically that is the level where you'll have containers, and in the containers you can have services. So that's how you should think about it.
So this would work fine with Docker, for example?
Yes.
You can host Docker containers.
So if you go to our Linux documentation site, we actually already talk about how you want to do that.
So. Yeah. That is the one I could not show you, but yes, that's. Yes. Any other questions?
Yes, it works on 2016 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So at this point, you have to set it up for machine identity so that those machines can access it. We are also working on features so that you can set up GMSA or domain accounts and run your cluster using those GMSA or domain accounts, and then it becomes a whole lot easier to set that file share up.
In terms of multi-tenancy,
mm-hmm.
My application that only other
So the auth, for the service, the auth depends upon the service provider, right? Whoever has written that service, whoever is managing that service needs to decide what authentication and authorization model they want to use. So that state is specific to that particular instance. Nothing else has access to that particular state.
So we're out of time, but we certainly can come to the booth. We certainly can go over great detail.
The booth is closed, but
Booth is closed. We can talk outside, yeah. Of course. Here's the container host. This is your example. We actually are running it in a container. So this was the one I was trying to show, and then I now I can show it. All right, thank you so much. We have run out of time. I appreciate you guys coming.